very quickly. If anyone would like the presenting the past completion card, it'll be at the back of the room. Linda is not here this evening, obviously. But if you have any questions or anything, I will try to help. And if I can't, I will ask Linda. She's coming back soon. That's all I have.
Hey, guys, how are you? How many people in the room went to any of Venerable Robina's teachings? All right, almost everybody. Great. So I'm sure you all had a wonderful time. I did. I'm pooped, but I had a great time. There are still a few copies left of this booklet that she provided for us, and this is on this particular module, the
Presenting
the Path, all the points of the path. So they're out on the little table out next to the bookstore if you want one, and there's no charge for them. And then you'll remember that she talked about karma, and I like some of the way she talks about it, like, you know, you're the boss, you're the boss. And we are the boss, and that's the great thing about karma, that, you know, the law of karma means that what's happening to us right now, we brought it about. We created the causes for it. So what we want to have happen in the future, we can start creating the causes for that right now. And that's some of the thinking behind one of the things we do at Kanapa Center, because we do find the teachings so precious and so valuable. We want to always have them. We always want to receive them for ourselves personally and for the center and for our community here in Raleigh. And so one of the things we do is give our teachers a little bit of appreciation. And so we have an offering here for Hemant.
Don't expect that at all.
There you go, my dear. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. He's creating causes. You guys have a great class. I'll see you. He's donating it to the Kanapa.
That's right.
Thank you. Whatever it is in there.
It's for donation only. So everything's offered.
Yeah. How can you take this? This is a wonderful place. And I tell you, my life has changed personally. And I'm sure it's helping many of you, and it's a community, and it's a little bit counts. Everything we do for this center creates the causes. Remember, we've been learning about mind and karma all along. And so if you can even create a small seed for teachings to continue, for some of you to come and teach and to become good at it, how wonderful that is, right? And so that's a wonderful thing. So I'm just blessed. Thank you. So today, I know some of you are saturated with a week worth of teaching, but I really appreciate the fact that, what a segue, right? We've been learning about presenting the path, and how nice that Venerable Robina came and kind of talked about it. It's like a cappuccino with a nice design on the top, right? She kind of just capped it all for you. So it's wonderful. So today, rather than getting really deep, we're going to kind of go through the summary like I normally do. It's good after a while to kind of see what we did, what we went through, and why. But what I want to do today is actually show you and share with you that if you were to open up any of these books, you know, we'll take this for example, Liberation in Palm of Your Hand, right? And as I am going through some of these things, what happens with a lot of students or new people, they learn about karma. Then while they're learning about karma, they get into all the details of the karma. Then we get into suffering. Then we get into refuge, and you lose the concept of the title. Where were you in this stops that you had towards your journey to become a Buddha? Right? You've been traveling, and you've detoured a little bit. Why? Because you want to see the highway from far. Okay? Or you use the tool, or you saw a scenic thing, and somebody says, oh, stop at the rest stop. Let's look at the and take a picture of the mountains. And then you forget if you were going south or north. Right? So I want to do that today as something to just kind of close this out, and hopefully that we'll move forward. So before we get going, let's do our calm abiding. Let's bring our mind to this place and to this moment. Something dings are going on here. Okay. All right. I don't think so. We need to think about your legs, hands, your head, your eyes, I think you're familiar with it now. The idea is to just keep your back a little straight and be relaxed and just either close your eyes or keep them slightly open so that you're aware where you are. And you bring your mind, focus your mind on your breath. Breath is neutral, right? So that is just simply breath. And what happens is you'll find yourself swaying away or another thought comes and within seconds you're somewhere else. That's okay. Observe that. Let your mind know that that's just a thought and bring your mind again back to the breath. Okay, let's do that for a few seconds here. While you're still there, let's set our motivation. Motivation is extremely important. Remember, if you want to go someplace, do something, you need to have an intention. So if you want to learn these Buddha's teachings and all of these classes that you've been coming to, you need a good motivation. So why are we doing this? What do we want our motivation to be? We know we want to develop our qualities. We know we want to be more happy, less neurotic, less miserable. We know that, and we are beginning to get confidence that it's possible. Isn't that marvelous? And then we look at others, and we see they're in the same boat. We know they want the same, so we want the same for them. That's compassion. So on the basis of developing our qualities all the way to Buddhahood, may we be able to benefit every single sentient being. How amazing. For this reason, we listen to these teachings, process, think about it, and apply them in our daily lives. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to make it a little easy for some of you. I hope it's not too boring. I'm just going to start to cover just about what we've covered in a very short way. I'm not going to deep dive into a lot of these things that we've covered so many times. But I think it's good to see how the path is laid out in Lamrim. Right? We started by really a little joke about going to New Jersey or New York. You don't want to get stuck near Hoboken, right? You have to prepare for it. And you have to understand what... If you're going to drive, fly, you're going to have money for gas if you're driving, and you need some money for tolls. Similarly, we have to understand how this Lamrim is set up and how lucky we are that our lineage teachers have given this to us. There were so many teachings, right? 84,000 teachings. And what happened? Somebody, Lama Tsongkhapa and Lama Tisha, they worked so hard to create this beautiful, succinct way, step by step, called Lamrim. Stages to the path. And that's what this whole module was about, presenting the path. You know, what is it that Buddhism is all about? You know, either it's your curiosity or it's something you want to really do something about. lot of questions come to our mind. A lot of times we come to these classes and we see somebody talk about a topic and it's like, how does this fit in? Am I supposed to know this? Am I supposed to do something with it? You know, what do I do? So these are the kinds of things that people have questions. At least that's what I had when I first came. It all sounded really good. I always felt very nice when I left the class, but I was thinking like, okay, so where does this, in this recipe, where does this come in? You know, so thankfully we have this lambrim, okay, stages to the path. So let's start really quick. You can see this. So we, first of all, I defined a few things for you. So we went through the life of Buddha and the teachers and so forth. It's important. If you look at lambrim, if you open up any of these books, the first thing it talks about is the lineage, about the teacher, how the teacher should be and how a student should be. That's how it starts. And it's important to establish that, because if you come with preconceived notion to fight it, you're not here to learn. You're just intellectualizing it. And that's fine, perfectly fine. But if you're really here to listen and absorb and then intellectualize it, then it gives you some space to absorb some of these things. Otherwise, you already have a big wall in front of you, right? Or you come with some wrong views. So anyways, so we went through some definitions. A lot of these words are used from those days in Eastern side. So you hear words like nirvana and bodhicitta and bodhisattvas and, you know, so we kind of started to define some of those things. What is samsara? And if you look at your notes, if you've taken any notes, if you still feel that you need to know them, I have the vocabulary with me. You feel free to make some copies. These words will come again and again, and I think it's very important that a lot of times we'll tell people to read a book, and then they'll open the book. The first chapter is usually very nice. As soon as you start getting into the real subject matter, these words come in all the time, right? And you're like, okay, I'll get to it, but you're going to lose a lot of it if you don't understand the real meaning of it. And I also felt that if you're all wanting to be Buddhas or enlightened, it's so important to know what enlightened means, right? It's not going to Ashboro. It's not going to Asheville. What is it? You know, what does it look like? You know, what is the nature of Buddha? If I want to be a Buddha, I want to know what that is like. So I think we defined a lot of his qualities. So let's go through some of these things really quick. So we went through definitions. We talked about qualities of Buddha. We also spoke a little bit about what lambrim is. It's created in a small scope, a middle scope, and a great scope. And the reason for that is just like a high school or school, right? You have a kindergarten, junior school, middle school, and high school. And it's important because of the capacity of the person. Right? If a person comes in and your child comes in, you throw him in a 12th grade, what happens? It's not going to be successful. So that's why the scopes are there. It also gives you a nice foundation to build upon. Right? So then we talked about the three preliminary contemplations. And I'm going to open this book just out of the blue, and I'll show you that if you were to open any of this lambrim book, so this is now we're going to start to bridge this for fun, right? So it talks about introduction and it goes to preliminaries. Okay? Discourse on lambrim, the greatness of the authors, the greatness of the Dharma, how to study and teach. So we kind of covered that. Remember the three parts, how to listen. You know, don't be a pot with a hole in it because everything comes out. Right? Okay, don't be upside down pot because nothing goes in. You don't want to have that brain. And you don't want to have a pot with muddy waters. Remember we talked about that because then you already have preconceived notions before you come here with wrong views. So they talk about that. Then they talk about the preparatory rites, how to prepare. And what are the three things they talk about? Let's see. Well, they talk about how you clean and motivate yourself. So we do a motivation in the class, right? Kadapa Center is already clean for you. Then this is where it starts. They talk about the foundations, the three foundations of the path. Okay? That's what they call it. What is the first one? Devoting yourself to a spiritual guide. Right? You talk about that, mind, and human precious human rebirth. So you can see when we say about primers, we talk about contemplations, it's important to know that this thing should be in your head first, before you even understand the lambrim, that what does mind is, the whole thing is about mind basically. Right? If you really think about it, how important the mind plays a role in this. So we have to know what is mind, and I'm sure you now know your mind is your own mind. It is not your brain. It is not physical. Right? What you put in it is what happens. right? If you put positive thoughts, you create your path, your future for happiness. With the negative thoughts, you create a future with misery, probably. Right? So it's important how mind functions. Simple, very simple in that way. But you must read a little more about it. By just saying that, it's not important. You got to contemplate about mind. What is mind? Where does it come from? You know, and we talked a little bit about it, that each thought comes from a previous thought. Makes sense. It's very logical. Okay? If you think about it, where does this thought come from? It came from somewhere else because you had another thought. Before that, there was another thought. So it continues, and will continue that way on. And that makes a little sense now, that if the mind continues and it's not physical, what I put in it, will have a result. The result will be the ripening of that particular thought. Right? So that gets you into karma a little bit. But anyways, to keep on the scope here, so the nature of the mind, need a spiritual teacher, we all need. When you were born, you had parents. You know, we can Google everything, right? And learn a lot of things that way. But sometimes that can also lead you into wrong thinking. Sometimes not so bad, right? But you need a guide who's learned, who's gone through the practice, can really give you some guidance. And then we talked about how to find a good teacher, because it's not something you rush into. This is something you develop with your own faith, and faith is confidence. You look at their students, you look at what they've been doing, what their qualities are, and then slowly you develop that devotion. And then you can visualize after a while that teaching coming from that particular teacher is like Buddha teaching you right now. You know, you don't have to think what happened hundreds of years ago. It's that important because they've gone through it. And we have a Geshe La here, right? 25, 26 years of education in Sarajay. Okay, he is a monk. He speaks the language, he knows Lamrim, and he teaches us all the time. How lucky we are. So we must be thankful for that. Right? So that's the qualities of the teacher and precious human rebirth. Think about it. Though they talk about suffering in human rebirth, at least it's a human rebirth and not an animal birth. You can talk about all day. Look at Discovery Channel, how animals, what they go through, and how they hurt each other or live in fear. Right? So at least the human rebirth is precious. Why? Because it allows you to practice. It allows you to change certain things. It allows you to create positive mindsets. It's amazing how mind can cognize mind. That's an amazing ability. You can tell your mind, I am thinking. So that's a precious human rebirth. And even more precious, you're sitting here and you attended those teachings from Venerable Robina, most of you. These are all good seeds you had. There was some precondition in your mind, some seeds in your mind to say, I gotta know more. I like this. I want to learn this. And you find your way. And then things happen in life and you wind up here. It's amazing. Karma works just that way. It's not random. Right? And so then we talked about death and impermanence. Why it's important? It's important to know everything is impermanent. Nothing is permanent. You know, we think about this concrete self and this concrete building is changing all the time. Things that existed a couple of hundred years ago don't exist. We can't even remember our fourth great-grandfather's name. Same thing will happen to us. Like it or not. Right? And we fear it. It's a fear of unknown. In our world, in this particular Western, we have this death as something we want to deny, like, it's not going to happen to me. I don't want to think about it. Though we know it, we don't think about it. So it's important sometimes. It's part and process of life. Why not just face it and think about it? And know it's going to come. So what can you do about it? And got to know the three things about death. Right? What is it? It's definite. You can't deny that. It's uncertain. The time is uncertain. And you have opportunity, and dharma is the way that's going to give you the relief at the end of your life. So it's time to practice. It's an opportunity. Those three things are important. Matter of fact, I'm going to do this two or three things at one time for those taking certification. Okay? Let's take a look at that. And you'll see that we've covered just about all of these things. One of the questions you may be asked, what is the correct way to listen to the teachings, explain the three parts. You should know them. What are the three preliminary contemplations? You should know that. What is the name of the text that Lamrim is based on? Who is the author and what century? We talked about that in the first two classes extensively, Lama Atisha, who went to Tibet. He was invited there and he saw Buddha teaching was there, but it was lost. They had lost the plot, I use the words. And he wrote a nice, concise book, The Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment. That is the beginning of the Lamrim, and then Lama Tsongkhapa came, 14th century, and kind of put it together, stages of the path. And that's what we learn. So you should be able to at least know this a little bit. Okay, that's our lineage teachings. And what are the four opponent powers? And we're going to go with that into it, and we have covered that too. I'm going to go through all of these things side by side so you can see the how we are bridging the path together. Okay, still in the lower scope. Okay, we are still talking lower scope. Okay, and then we also went through the death process. I think a lot of people are curious what happens when I die. So if you know what happens, then you lose the fear. And then you understand what you need to do, and this is what will happen. And this is what will happen later on. So it's good to talk about it. We talked about how the four elements dissolve and how the subconscious dissolves and the eight stages of death, right? So we talked about that. Okay, so it was important to also know a little bit about the realms. You know, we didn't talk a lot of details, but it's important to know that what are these realms. Some people talk about, oh, this again, there we go, heaven, hell type things. No. Realms, you need to know, are dimensions of your mind. If you are in a human birth right now, your mind had done something, you had done something generous, your morality or giving, that you were able to be born as a human being to be able to practice. Now, if you do some very non-virtuous things like killing, right, and you create fear for a lot of people, it's possible that your mind will find a parent or a space where that's the kind of environment you are in. Could be any of these realms. So it's important to know that that can happen, right? And so again, this is a contemplation to be done. There are meditations on it, and you can think about it. What is this? And what can happen? These are dimensions in life of different mindsets. This is not something, I remember I said, you can't buy a ticket and fly there and come back. Right? You kind of go there. Okay? Then we talked about refuge. So now you kind of contemplated all of these things and you say, you know, this makes sense to me. You know, this is really good. I think I need to bring this in my mind. I need to change myself and I can start. And you think that this is very pragmatic. You own it. This is not somebody over there saying this will happen and that will happen. You are in the driver's seat. Like Venerable Rabina would say, you are the boss. Right? You manage your life. So how wonderful that is. And so you decide, yes, I'm committing myself to this. That's why you take a refuge. Refuge is no different than a child going to a mother for refuge. But you make a commitment to yourself. It's more of a practice inside you. You are firm now that, yes, this is the path I want to go. And I'm going to abide by certain things. So you take a refuge. Okay? And then, of course, once you take the refuge, the vows play a big role. We talked about that a little bit. Okay, why? Because there are many good people out there who are not Buddhists, right? Or they're not taking vows. That doesn't make them bad or anything like that. But when you have a commitment to do something and you take a vow, remember, you have put a seed into your mind stream. And like Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, if a person doing a positive thing that has not taken a vow is still a positive act. However, a person who has taken a vow and does a positive act multiplies many times because now you're really affecting the mind stream part because you already have the seed. You're consistently practicing those things. It's in your head now. I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. And you've already contemplated enough to know the outcome of doing something non-virtuous. So your mind is advanced in so many ways and you're consistently carrying those vows with you. And sometimes we do break them and we purify, right? So we'll go through that a little bit. But anyway, that's the reason for taking vows, okay? And then, of course, we talked about karma extensively for two class, and we'll cover that a little bit in a few minutes. And we talked about the law of karma. There's a question in here, why is it called a law of karma? right? It's like gravity. Remember we talked about gravity? Gravity exists. Newton just happened to, an apple falls or something falls on his head and says, oh, that's interesting. Why it fell down and didn't go up? So he did some experiments. He consistently worked at it. He contemplated on it. And he got to understanding that, yes, if you live on this planet, on this Earth, there is something called a gravity. It's going to fall down. That's why we are on the Earth and we don't fly away. So he came and he made that. That's like a law, right? Law of gravity. Karma is like that. Buddha is telling you, this is how karma works. Cause and effect. Okay? You believe it and you don't believe it, that's fine. But that's the way it is. Now, once you've committed to these teachings and you know it's coming straight from Buddha, and then it answers a lot of questions for a lot of people. For me, sometimes you wonder why a young child dies. Right? If somebody's sitting there and making decision, you should die early and you should live long. And then what is going on there? But karma tells you very clearly, what's your past life? You have some results ripening. Sometimes you see good people have bad endings. Some people have rich people go in jail and poor people have a lot of respect. We kind of talked about some of those examples. So karma works in many ways that way. Okay? In the end, we kind of looked at this slide and we talked about samsara, we talked about suffering and rebirth, and we talked about why Buddhism starts with suffering a lot, because it's the first noble truth, that there is suffering, right? But it seems gloom and doom when you kind of excited to learn about Bodha Dharma. But we also can think about it this way. We talk about losing weight or exercising or running a marathon, first you have to face the fact that yes, I don't like what I see in the mirror. I want to lose some weight. So you have to first recognize that there is suffering. Then you can do something about it. Then you need to know why. So if you're on a diet, you got to know what nutrition am I taking or what am I not doing that I need to do so I can lose weight. So that practical. Either you do it or you don't. And the results will show. Right? Anything you take is similar to that. He gives you beautiful four noble truths. Okay, there is suffering, there's the causes for suffering, cessation of suffering, you can cessate it or you can get it out, and there's a path. We are talking about this path, presenting the path, right? So it's important to talk about suffering a little bit. Refuge, we already talked about, okay? And we talked about, remember what is the Sangha, what is the Dharma, what is the Buddha? You're taking refuge in the three jewels, right? Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And then when you're reading some of these books, you find words like absolute and relative and all that. And we talked about it. When you think of Buddha from completely omniscient, omnipotent mind, that's Buddha. When you talk about relative, you're talking about historical Buddha. Things like that, right? So just so you understand the differences. Okay? And then, again, karma. Okay? I think we already had enough of this. The important thing is Buddhism sees karma as occurring over lifetimes. You know, we talk about karma, something happened to you, you know, tit for tat. It's not like that. It happens over lifetimes. Okay? Abiding in law of karma, very easy. This is simple. We just talked about it. And then we need to, nothing is random is important to know. And the four conditions to bringing a fully ripened results. Okay, we also need to understand, we'll talk about that in a minute. We also need to know the non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind. You should know this by now. If you don't, you're not paying attention. Or you didn't go to Venerable Rabina's training. You should know these things like this now. Body, speech, and mind. Okay, all three. Okay, then you see four ways karma ripens. Right, we talked about it. If you do something, we can look positively. We always have a focus on negative. But if you do something good, you get a good birth. Right? Right? You can also, if you have created a lot of stealing and anger in past lives, guess what? You'll be born. You'll carry that forward. And you wonder why this comes out of nowhere. Because you've been practicing it. Right? You talked about environmental karma, collective karma. You're in that environment, everybody's doing the same kind of nonsense, and you wonder why sometimes you're born in a place where bombs are flying and earthquakes are taking place, so there's no water. And how lucky we are that you are in this environment, air-conditioned room, sitting at your will, right? And I have a car to drive here to come to a class. You know, you think, ask Keshala sometimes how they used to go to classes when teacher came in Tibet. And you'll be amazed to see how many weeks people travel on mules and yaks to go to a teaching. So a lot of good karma, guys, you all have. All right? So any question on that should be okay there, right? And then, of course, you know, you have to know the karma to be fully ripened. These four things have to be in place. Right? You have to have an intent to do something. So motivation is important. You have to have an object. So karma can't open the door unless there's a door. You know? So, and then action. Killing, for example, right? Something is there. You have an intention to hurt it because you don't like it, and you kill it. That's called the action. And the result is that object dies. That's a full karmic action. Then there are subtle other things. If there is no intent and something happens, then there is no karma there. Just so you know that. Okay? I gotta keep check with the timing here. Okay? The important thing to know is habits and tendencies. We've been creating our habits and tendencies for many, many lifetimes. And this is why it is so natural. Sometimes you think, I didn't even think about it, and bam, you do something. Right? You lose a temper or you kill something because you haven't trained yourself to think that this little thing is what we call in Tibetan Semchen. What does that mean? Mind possessor. We all are mind possessor. Right? It's in my way. It makes me unpleasant. I don't like it. I'm already making stories up. If I get this, my face will look bad. It will be red. Then I have to buy a medicine. And it could be infection. You go on and make up the whole story, and before you know it, the thing is dead. Right? You could have gone like this and just let it go. Blow a mantra on it, you know? But I'm just saying, I mean, it's not so simplistic. You gotta think about these things. Why we do certain things. Okay? I mean, to the point that we've even made sports out of killing things. Okay? It's amazing how mind can do that, you know. And for those people who are recognizing karma, you may just think differently. You know, save some life. How nice. Okay, the good thing is that everything is impermanent, so karma runs out. It's not permanent. You're not damned for lifetimes forever in some place. Okay? It ripens, it's finished. And you can even change all those things. Right? You can purify. Okay, let's talk about that a little bit. Please know that there are causes for everything. Okay? And remember, your mind is your own. So don't blame others. And it's not a hit or a miss. So then we talked about purifying. How wonderful. This is the good news, right? So how do you purify? Remember, guys, it is not like a magic pill. You don't say, oh, I did something wrong. Let me go open a bottle, take this pill, now I'm clean. It's all about your mind. You got to work at it. So the intensity in how you purify is more important than just knowing it. We can sit here and you can remember the four R's. Easy to remember. Okay? You'll remember this, the four R's. You know, I got so excited when I first came to Kadampa Center, and it was my first four things I remembered. A six of that and a three of this, but this four I remembered. Okay? But it was important. So when you regret, this is a wonderful, really, really, talking about therapy, self-therapy, regret is very different than guilt. Guilt is still wanting some attention. Oh, poor me. Tell me I'm not such a bad person. Please give me some love, right? Give me some attention. Or I'm going to sit in the corner and cry. I'm going to get depressed. I'm going to hurt myself. I don't like anything in the life. That's guilt takes you that way. Regret is you really feel bad you did it. So you are going to look for what can I do to not do it again. How strongly do you feel, I don't know, out of habit this happened. I really feel bad in my heart. I'm not going to do it again. What can I do to remedy that? That's regret. Move on. It's already done. No attention, no advertisement, no poor me, Nothing like that. That's the wonderful part about that, right? And then you look for, you rely. Rely on what? The teachings. You have entire medicine right here, Dharma. Right? It's telling you how karma works, how mind works, and you can change it. You can make your mind positive by practicing it. You can use antidotes. If you took something, give it back or do some generous activity. Try to change so you feel how it is. So you can always do the opposite of it. You can do so many things, and then you find remedy. Remedy is what I'm talking about. So you rely on teachings. You rely on your teachers. You rely on your community. But when you come to remedy, you can do a couple of things. You can do purification practices, do some mantras, do some meditation. But not only that, you can actually act some things out. It's okay to say, I'm sorry. I really didn't mean to say those things. Or try not to do it again. So do something about it. Go get some flowers to somebody. Go out and somebody's sitting in the corner, give something. If you stole something, practice to tell your mind to do something positive and change that mind. So now your regret is working. You are following the medicine. So you are definitely relying on Dharma and you are doing something about it. And then in the end, it is all about resolve, how strongly you don't want to do it again. And know that we sometimes make this resolve and make mistakes. Right? It's not walk out of this room and all of a sudden you have a resolve. Good if you can. And what all the teachers are telling you, start slowly. Do it for a few minutes. Do it for an hour. Do it for a day. And rejoice with it. If you're able to do it, know that you have this ability to do it. And slowly and steadily you will see your mind will start to think that way. And then you've taken care of your 4 hours. Good? And I also reminded you that we have a venerable Tendrin-law, who used to always say she added the fifth R from our own side here, and that was to rejoice. Okay, this is not all depressed, depressed, depressed. This is to point out that we can do something with it. And when you are successful, feel good about it. And that's how you cap, right? That's how you kind of close, put a closure to it and move on. So don't constrain yourself. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, don't do that. With ease, you recognize it, you feel it, you find the antidote, you learn from this, what should I do to remedy this? How can I purify? What is Vajrasattva mantra? Is that for purification? How does that work? Learn and then practice. And once you do that and you do some activities along with it, you are purifying, you're changing your mind. Okay? So that's the four. I wanted to pay attention to this because you just went through this with probably Venerable Rabina, but good to have this really strong in your mind. When we talk about, obviously, now we are moving into the middle scope. Okay? So the karma, precious human rebirth, the death and impermanence, that was the lower scope, the three contemplations, lower scope. Now you have some fundamentals built. You're moving into the middle scope. So if I were to go into this book and let's take a look at middle scope, we should be right there, right along with it. Yep. Part 5, medium scope, general suffering of samsara and the suffering of the higher rebirth, understanding the causes of samsara, the path of liberation. So obviously we are moving into the middle scope here, types of suffering, remember suffering of suffering, suffering of change, and the pervading suffering, right? The three types of suffering. I want to make sure I say it the correct way. Well, here it is, next slide. All pervading suffering, that's correct. And we need to understand the differences of those. When you get hurt, cut, or something, that's pain, real pain, right? That's pain of pain, suffering of pains. But then suffering of change, this is very interesting. If you think about our life, in our lives, we kind of go moment to moment looking for those temporary happiness, right? You just say, let's go eat outside, let's go have a chocolate cake, or let's watch a movie. We do these things all the time to keep our mind a little sanity, right? A little sane here. But think about it. Is that permanent happiness? No. You buy a house, how excited are you when you buy a first house? Then what happens after you live in it and the first time the roof has to be fixed? I'm going through that right now. So I can give you an example. It's a little painful, isn't it? Okay, think about everything. You sit in the shade for a long time, the sun looks wonderful. Sit out there, it's 90 degrees, you got to go in air-conditioned room. So those happinesses are there. You must recognize it, but it's temporary. Right? So they're talking about that kind of changes. A new job, then what happens after 5 years? Right? Same job. Not the same happiness when you first got the notice you got a new job. Same thing. And then all pervasive is what we deal with all the time. Because of your karma and because of our tendency, we have little anxiousnesses, little jealousy, little envious, little worries all the time. Worry, 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 right? What will happen? What will happen to this? If I lose this, if I gain that? We live in this consistent worry, anxious moment. Not everybody, but some people do. And that would be all pervasive suffering. Okay? And then understand why we suffer. So we kind of defined this already. And we talked about this, why we suffer, and we went into the 12 links. Why we suffer, and remember we defined the three poisons. You will hear this in every reading you do. No matter what subject you pick up in Buddhism, you start to hear the word, the three poisons, the root delusions, the afflictions. These are the words. Okay? Ignorance, attachment, aversion. These are the few words you will hear, the three poisons. And we talked about, so we had to talk about, because this is the path, the presenting the path, the three aspects of the path, renunciation, emptiness, and bodhicitta are the three principal aspects. If you really want to understand the Buddha Dharma and to become enlightened, these three things are extremely, extremely part of this, the package. You must know this. But first you need to know why we are in this samsara in the first place. And we talked about this a lot. But we started with an introductory piece. And what is it? That we have this fabricated view of I as existent. This, and then when you know, I'm sure you went through this with Venerable Robina. I'm sure she gave you an example of the cup. Right? Okay, I've been with her on our teachings many times. I've read some of her books. That example is always there. It's a great example. Same thing with I. We think I is this something solid in me. And what Buddhism is saying is, when you really look for it, this I, it does not exist. The reason you feel this I, this body and mind, because of your karmic seeds and delusions, you carry this delusion with you of ignorance, and therefore we create this label of I and feel this way. And this entire training is to get that I, loosen that I out of you, and then you will see how things exist. That's the whole training on emptiness, basically, in short. Very deep subject, and you can go into very detail, but for right now, understand that. And I'm sure the example of the cup is pretty poignant at this time. You look at the cup, it is a cup. Right? You see it, you drink from it, you see it. If I told her, what is this? It's a cup. Because this is convention. We all decided we're going to call it a cup that looks like that. But when you really look at the cup, is there a cupness in that cup? You will find, no, it's a sand, some ceramic, some paint, some other things, and it's just something we call that looks like that and functions like that, a cup. It's great for this communication piece, but there is no inherent cupness in it. That's all. It's same way with an eye. You can say, I am sitting here and we are right now talking. Great for conversation. But when you think about impermanence and how things come and how things go, there is all dependent arising. There is nothing solid about pure existence. If it existed on its own, there will be no change. It will always exist. There will be no change. There is no reason to think. There is no thinking then. There is no thoughts coming even. You exist. So you got to think, your mind will fight this in the beginning, because we have for years and years and lifetimes have been practicing this delusion and have had ignorance in us. And the 12 links tells you why. It tells you why you come back in samsara, how it starts with an ignorance and goes through how the mental formations start, how the consciousness starts to put those the delusions that came with it. It begins to do that. Then we have craving starts. We have craving and grasping. And then what happens is at before birth, the sperm goes into the parents. It wants to go because it has the seed of karma. It has no... It cannot think at that point. It wants to do the same thing it's been habituated with, what it craves for. That's when it takes birth, and then the rebirth takes place. Then you get the name and the form, and then all of a sudden the attachment begins. I'm good. I'm nice. This is mine. This is not yours. Respect, you know, please love me. All this starts. And then in the end, you crave for those things again, and your throwing karma takes you to the next rebirth. And all along, they're telling you, if you have an aspiration to not be born in this cycle again and again and again, you must have a strong aspiration to come out of this ignorance. So understand emptiness and understand bodhicitta. Yes, bodhicitta is another strong way of removing I from you because you're thinking of others. Think of that for a second. Okay, because a lot of people think compassion, well, I can't even like me, how can I like the rest of the world? That's how our mind goes, because that's ego talking. It's self-cherishing ego talking. It's me-oriented. But the minute that is diminished, a little bit by little bit by little bit, then you look at Dalai Lama, look at Geshe La. It's always something to help you. Okay, that nature develops. Not everybody is perfect, but there are bodhisattvas and arhats that have liberated themselves that way. So that's just the training part, right? You understand these things. Okay, so this was important piece. So a lot of people still have that question, I still don't get the emptiness piece. Then who am I? Where does this I even come from? So for that, I made sure I wrote this down. Okay, this is the I that exists in dependence upon body and mind. Remember, we bring the karmic seeds with us. So this body, we created our future. So our mind already has ignorance in it. That already has the I in it. That subtle I comes from it. And this is a good point. When they talk about middle way, if things don't exist at all, then you fall into that abyss of nothingness. Then what am I doing? And if you think of concrete I, then you're mistaken, because now you don't know how reality is. So this is the middle way. Know that we are here, you are there, there is something called Kap, there is something called Sandra, Alex, right? We are all here. But what is that I? Very subtle I, and that's what keeps us in that ego. The ego keeps coming and go circle by circle, life by life. So that's why I put this down. So look at this excerpt here. Not even an atom of samsara or nirvana has such a thing as inherent existence. So that's solid, right? It's impermanent. Things are changing and they're dependent arising. Pick anything. Can you find something permanent? Look at the room, look at the pillow, look at the desk, look at each other. You look at how you were a year ago, how this was this existing a couple of years ago. Maybe a few years from now it may still be there or not there. But everything is changing. Everything is impermanent, but it is dependent arising. Somebody made that, somebody polished it, it came from a tree, the tree came from a seed, it goes on and on and on. Same way with us, so that's called dependent arising. So now you can say, yet there is no fraud in saying that all of these atoms are dependent arising from cause and effect, from karma. So you understand dependent arising, things coming are dependent arising, it's dependent on something else. Right? Things are impermanent. There is no concreteness in it because things are always changing. That's the way you want to see it. That is I, including I. Okay? So, please bless me so that I may realize Nagarjuna's great view. He is our teacher, Pandit from India, who wrote this Madhyamika view, the middle way. So I gave him credit for that. Okay? So, this is a great segue. I know that we have half an hour. I still want to cover a few things. Maybe, how about this? We'll move on to, I want to cover the six perfections a little bit, And I want to talk about establishing a daily practice and a little bit about equanimity, bodhicitta, just a little bit, so we can complete the module. And then we can do, if time is there, we'll do a nice little meditation. Okay? So we're going to talk about a little bit about six perfections, equanimity and bodhicitta. Okay? So, very good. Okay, so let's talk about the six perfections. Okay. So remember when we were first in class number 3, we talked about the two wings, wisdom and compassion, correct? Okay, so six perfections is what the bodhisattvas practice. So you remember what a bodhicitta is and a bodhisattva is. You need to think about what those words are, right? Okay? So I think you should know that. I'll leave it up to you to understand what is a bodhisattva. We defined it. So kind of look into it. Okay? So bodhisattvas practice this. They are on their way to become Buddhas. Okay? So what do they do? So this is another way of looking at, remember the two wings, but there's another way of looking at it to clearly see in your mind. While we are here, things you do is called the method. Everything. So when we talk about be good, be generous, do this, and that's called active living, right? That's called the method. And then when you combine that, the way things are, emptiness, then you have this combination package. That's when you become like a bodhisattva. You have a full understanding of real dharma. You are on your way to Buddhahood. So let's talk about that. So what is this six perfections? And also know that the first 5 support the last one, and I'll tell you in a minute why. The first one is generosity. These are six perfections. So every day you must think about generosity, and generosity comes in many ways. It's not always giving money, but that is one way to do it. You also can give advice, can give your time, so many ways generosity works. Well, the difficulty is with the money for a lot of people, right? It's amazing. To a friend, we have no problem giving $100. But to a beggar, we have a hard time giving $1. Because we have our mind saying, he will do drinking and he will get drugs. That's not where you need to be. Just be generous. If you want to be a generous, practice generosity. Budget some time when the teachers come for the center, whatever. Budget a little bit of money. It's a good practice. If bodhisattvas say this is what they practice, then there is a lot of, this is very, very important. Okay? So generosity is very important. Let's see. I have a statement here, I think. Lama Tsongkhapa says, generosity is a wish-fulfilling jewel with which you can fulfill the hopes of all sentient beings. It is the basis of the activity of bodhisattvas in that it develops selfless and undaunted courage to lead all sentient beings to enlightenment. Giving. And they say bodhisattvas, when they give, they feel the same way a child feels when they get a Christmas gift or something like that. They feel very happy to give. That's how bodhisattvas, they take it even further. Because they know wisdom, how emptiness works, and because they already practice all six paramitas or the six perfections, that they can be even altruistic because they know how things are. They see beyond all of these things. So they can even be altruistic. So sometimes when you hear these things, like he had no problem if you just take my hand, and you hear these views, for our mind that's very difficult to comprehend. But you can understand how generous mind, perfected mind can be. So you understand that. Second is morality, and also generous, really important. Whatever you get today, whatever you have today, is because you practiced generosity last life. Money, job, place, home, whatever, because of generosity. You get something because you have given. Karma is very strong in this, right? That's how it works. Okay? And it opens up to all sentient beings. All right. I'm ahead of myself here. So generosity is an attitude, and it's a way to open yourself to all sentient beings. Okay? And it's really interesting to know that with ego, compassion has a low ceiling. When you have a strong ego, compassion doesn't arise because it's self-cherishing, right? It's me-oriented. And beyond ego, compassion can soar limitlessly. And so a bodhisattva who's perfected some of these things, there is no I in them. So they always see out how to make somebody else happy. Okay? This is the level of generosity. Okay, morality, quickly. It's about refraining from harming somebody and actively benefiting others. Actively. There's two parts, right, in everything. You can think a certain way and you can do a certain thing. You can all be very nice inside. But actively doing is difficult sometimes. So they're saying even for morality, budget a little time. You know, come and help out, do whatever. And you guys, so many of you do it. I'm just saying this as a general. This is not about us not doing it versus doing it. It's in general. If you think about it, we have many ways we help each other. We help not only here, but outside. You know, I heard even today some conversation, I'll just do it. Ask me and I'll be there for you. Those are all morally very nice things. Remember these seeds. It will ripen in future very positive. So start slowly. This is not a panic time. Oh my gosh, I don't do this and I don't. Nothing about this entire dharma is panic enough to create the urgency, but not dwell into it. Don't get into the whirlpool. Oh my God, how horrible I am. None. Remember, that's guilt. That's looking for attention. That's attachment. Just you do it spontaneously, do it with goodwill, just do it. That's what they're talking about, morality. Okay? Again, Lama Zopa Rinpoche mentioned somewhere here, I remember reading it, he's saying, if a friend, you give a friend $100, I think I mentioned it already, it's fine, but if you give 5 rupees to a beggar in India, for example, many times merit, it has many more merits, because it was hard to do. Because when you like somebody, there is a gain in there. Right? Friendship has some attachment in it, right? He or she likes what I do, I like what they do, we kind of hang out together, we kind of support each other's egos, everything. Right? But when you're a stranger or a beggar, it's like, maybe tomorrow. So think about those things. That's all. It's all about thinking. There's so many, you know, there could be many valid ways of thinking it, but it's all about developing that mind of morality. Okay? So this is a big one. Patience. According to Venerable Ramina, it's the most courageous things out of the 6 paramitas. She says it's a very courageous thing. Okay? And why? Because let's look at impatience. Okay? It's a response that you can't stand. It's not about waiting. Time is not the only piece of patience. Oh, I'll wait. If any, he said 5 minutes, she said 5 minutes, took 15 minutes. That's a small part of the patience. But think about so many ways patience works. Okay? So her example obviously is about the red light. Right? And she talks about when you come to a red light, it's like, oh my gosh, this stupid light. Like, come on. Right? Get in a heavy traffic, what happens? Why me? Okay? I have a new thing, this is personally speaking, I get in traffic, my ego comes out a little bit, and I tell myself, Patty will sometimes call me and saying, how you doing? And instead of saying, stuck in the traffic, you know what I say? It's time to practice. It's time to practice. And I said, I'll call you back in a few minutes. And I immediately tell myself, calm down, you're there, nothing you can do, 3 lanes are full. You're not going to rush anything. You're not going to hurt. So why don't you do a mala? So I'll do some mantras. And all of a sudden, that goes away. It's like how crazy our mind is. Because the ego wants to be there on time, people to say, oh, wow, look at you, came early, all that stuff. That goes on in our head. I'm only speaking from my side right now. So that's a wonderful practice. So patience comes in many ways. But remember, patience of pain. When you have a little bit of pain going on, emotional pain, physical pain, you can cry about it, you can complain about it, or can have patience with it or do something about it. But that patience plays a role there. You know, Santi Deva has a very good saying. Let me see. He basically, in short, said that if you can't do something about it, he says, Shanti Deva says something like this, if you can't change something, hey, change it. It, otherwise, don't worry. Why do you bother? Right? Give it up. But there's also other ways. If you look at Louis Armstrong, these people who really work very hard, it's painful, it is hard to do, but they'll persevere and do it. Right? They work with their mind so strongly, and this is the same practice. Our nature is like, but you work at it and say, no, I can't think like this all day, every day. I gotta do something about it. So you gotta go hard. And that brings you to the fourth one. Enthusiasm, okay? Or enthusiastic perseverance is the word, joyful effort. Okay? It's the opposite of laziness. I'll go. Tomorrow. Comes with when you do your practice. Every day you're fine, you're excited after a class, you do your practice for 3 days. Fourth day, 5 minutes late, what happens? I'll do this later. Everything else has to, your coffee didn't go, your brushing your teeth didn't go away, but practice went away. That's part time. So think about importance of all this. Where do you push, where are you persevering through? Even college, right? It's not about intelligence in college. I used to tell my son, it's not about just being intelligent. You can read a book, go to a class, do a good job. Getting there, going to the labs, taking the test, and the days you don't want to go to your English 101 or accounting 101, and you still do it, you'll graduate. It's the same, perseverance. You know, happy to come. Keshala said one time, if you feel terrible coming to a good thing, then something is wrong. If you have conviction in you that this is good for you, then have a joyful effort. And again, without constraining your head. This is not about guilt, about not pleasing somebody else. It's not about, oh, how will they say, she say, he say. It's your practice. Loosen up and do it with a little joy in it, and you will see how it helps the mind. That's what they're talking about, okay? This is, again, from the syllabus and the training. So here we go. Enthusiasm, we talked about it. Gross laziness. Too busy, procrastination, I'm not capable, let's give up. I just can't do it. Okay? Going beyond the comfort zone. This now supports. So this is a big one I wanted to talk about. Okay. So now that we know all of these things, so everybody knows this by heart now already? Generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort. Fifth one is concentration, developing concentration. And the sixth one is wisdom. So now, we always talk about, so I know all of these things now. Okay, we've been coming to class, I know. So what do I do now? So how do I put this together now? So this is where you need to talk about meditation a little bit. Okay, the meaning of meditation in Tibetan is what? We have, Keshela says that many, many times. What's the Tibetan word for it? For meditation? Gom. Gom. G-O-M. You know what that means in Tibetan? Not meditation. It means becoming familiar with. So now think about it. Now you know how mind functions. You know how karma works. You know the four opponent powers. You know the 4 hours and the 5 hours. You know what kind of sufferings are there. You know how to purify yourself. You know all of these things. Now you gotta think about these things and really take it in, right? So first you do a calm-abiding meditation. You bring your state of mind, then you learn how to concentrate. So when we do, when you're focusing on your breath, what are you doing? You're trying to focus on your breath. Immediately your mind goes into a story, right? You go so many places. But then you bring it back to the breath. So you're practicing, just like tennis, just like cycling, just like anything else. You practice till you become good at it. So that brings you to a stable a mind, calm abiding. But then when you are able to concentrate and stay there for a while, then you go to a subtle level. Right? You go to a subtle level, and that's when it's called the insight meditation or analytical meditation. Okay? that's when you can take some of these thoughts, something that's not working for you or working for you, you can really deeply go and concentrate on those things and work it. How does karma work? What are my things that I'm doing that's non-virtuous? What are the things? And you will recognize your habits. And you will start to understanding then, how do you change it? It's still not happening. What can I do about it? You cannot just philosophize it. I got to do something to move it a little bit. So those are insight meditations. And there are wonderful books and all over the place. And I'm not advertising. I'm just telling you what has helped me. They're out there and they're available. How to meditate. I will use this if I have time today. Absolutely beautiful. And even the small book that I told you about, one you should get from Amazon. They have some very nice meditations in it. They're great. Great way to get you going. You know, and this is not about sitting cross-legged all the time and just being like this. It's wonderful if you can do it. But even thinking about it with walking, sitting in a chair, sitting in a sofa, give yourself that time to think. And then when you get, remember when you learn math first, it didn't make sense. Right? If I give you an algebra or simultaneous equation right now, you will say, what are you talking about, A plus B squared? What are you talking about? But then when you go through class, and at some point in eighth grade, it says, oh, I get it. I understand the concept now. You get, aha. It clicks in. So everything we do, right? At some point, you go through it several times, and you say, I get it now. Same way with meditation. That's how insight. So what the syllabus is telling you here is, once you get to that point and you see that glimpse, try to stay there for a while. The concentration should help you to stay there, because you kind of get it and it goes away. So you practice how to stay there for a while. And that's how you meditate, actually. And there are so many analytical meditations. These are tools. And this is so when you're learning these things, when you go through all these DV modules, mind and its potential, karma, presenting the path, emptiness, establishing daily practice, all of these modules, some of them are tools, some of them are teachings from the Lam Rim. And those Lam Rim teachings are things you should really take in your mind. And you should analyze those things through meditations. Okay? So, and what happens when you do this, you start to understand, you get wisdom. You directly perceive the example of the cup you can take, dependent arising, the eye cannot be found. When you have a direct perception of emptiness and you have developed concentration and you've done some analytical meditation, now you can perceive emptiness. Right now, it's very hard. Our mind is not habituated with that. It cannot fathom sometimes. For some it may. For others it's difficult. Why? Because we haven't done this. It's anti your ignorant mind, right? We have the eye in it, so it's hard for us to see that way. But once in a while you'll get a glimpse of it when you hear this again and again and again. But you must read and think and meditate. Look for the eye. Look at how things exist. Are they permanent? Are they changing? Will this exist in future? Think about these things, how things come to be. How many people have played a role for this to even appear here? So when you see this, our Sunday teachings, and you hear these things, that's what they're telling you. They're trying to make you realize, be good, be generous, have moral, don't do non-virtuous actions, so you should know all of them, of body, speech, and mind, right? How do you purify? So now you're beginning to hear the same things. So now put it in. And you will find little more detail, and at some point, it will stabilize. Okay? So that's when you get wisdom. These are your six perfections. This is what bodhisattvas practice. So every day, this is your method. While you're living, you could be generous. You could do some good things, benefit others, be moral. You can practice some patience. We all can need that. I need it. Right? We all need it. And then have some enthusiasm, some good, joyful effort when you do certain things, practicing dharma. Right? And learn to concentrate, and then ultimately understand how things exist, ultimate reality. Once you have this, you have it. You've got the juice. Okay. what they say. So just realizing emptiness and a lot of things we talk about. So remember, the morality, the first was generosity, morality, patience, and the enthusiasm. Play with the bucket of compassion. It's all compassion. And when the emptiness is, of course, naturally emptiness of things, ultimate reality. So that's the compassion side. So bodhicitta is very important. So I have a nice little statement here, a little excerpt. I want you to read this. I wanted to really pass out this from Lama Yeshe archive. And I just couldn't print that many pages from my printer. So I figured I'll take the important pieces of it. So I want you to take just a minute and read this silently. I always questioned bodhicitta for a while when I first started. He talks about compassion. Well, I'm a good guy. I give. I care for people. But how can you develop this universal compassion? How? Was a big thing in my mind. And then slowly and steadily, I started to read these things and began to understand what they are talking about. And Lama Yeshe really puts it very nicely. It's a wish, and it is important that when you're thinking about others, you're not thinking about I. How nice, right? When you think about compassion, if all of us thought that way, we would not worry about competing for nuclear weapons, he says in his little teaching. We would not be talking about, you build two, I'll build five. Because that's what's lacking. We don't care. So that's what he's saying here. Okay? So that's important. I want you to read this little quote. This will summarize bodhicitta for you, that's why. So do something with it. Practice it. Work with it. There's even a practice called Tonglen that Geshe La sometimes will teach you. It's very nicely put in this book. It is about taking somebody's difficulty and giving them your happiness. It's a practice to develop bodhicitta. Okay? You just that mind of wishing others to be happy. It's a very good practice called Tonglen. Okay, so when you get a chance, open a book or put down the word Tonglen. Plenty of material there. Great meditation in this book on Tonglen. I even actually page marked it. If you have time, I'll give you a quick paragraph. But we may run out of time, so I want to make sure that we go through this. So guys, let's take a look at the whole picture, everything that you've learned. So bodhicitta is the great scope. Okay? Equanimity, we didn't talk a lot about it. But you must understand there's a meditation about equanimity. When you see somebody that you like, somebody that's neutral, and somebody that you can't stand, enemy, right? We label them. If you really think about it and contemplate on it, and I'll just give you a quick snippet of what that is. Okay, the object of ignorance is what we call strangers. You don't know. This is on the general intellectual point of view. They don't give me anything. I don't give them anything. I don't care. Then we have the object of aversion, enemies. And then we have the object of attachment, friends, loved ones. In all that is the R. He or she does what I like. He or she doesn't do anything for me. He or she bothers me or doesn't do what I like or does what I don't like. So think about those things. But when you look at it, you can see that person wants to be happy. They have family, brothers, sisters. You can also go this way. If you know how many lifetimes you've lived, how many sentient beings are there, you've always had some relationship with each other. That's why they call them mother sentient beings. We've been each other's mother. You look at logic. How many sentient beings are there? How many lifetimes you've lived? And how interdependent things are. There is connections all the time. And you think about how a mother takes care of a child. Not only before birth, in carrying the baby, after birth, school, food, protection, just go on and on, how much love they give to the child. And so if you think of others that have interdependency or they've been mother sentient beings, then you will have compassion develop for them. And how can you, with that strong eye, only think of yourself when you're thinking about becoming Buddha, who cares and wants to help all sentient beings? How can you become Buddha without having that in the part of the package? So bodhicitta, probably the most important piece in this too. So three principal aspects of the path. Renunciation, not wanting to do this activity of life after life, death, and continue to do non-virtuous things, being ignorant. So you have to have an aspiration that I want to be a Buddha. I want to get out of this. So that's your renunciation. It's not talking about leaving your home and walking away. Okay? Practicing is in your state of mind. Then the learning of the emptiness, how things exist. That takes the Dhamma completely out. You know, it's not me-oriented anymore. And then having compassion, having concern for others. Okay? So, three aspects of the path. So now, guys, take a look at this. You've gone through the scopes, the path. You can pick up this book, look at this, and you'll find that you've covered, I don't know if visually you can read it or not. So you've gotten a snippet of the main subjects of all three scopes. Right? From the death, impermanence, refuge, abiding laws of karma, causes of suffering, potential to be free of suffering, renunciation, coming out of the 12 links, aspiration to renunciate, suffering and its causes, the Four Noble Truths, what is compassion, compassion for those who do harm, even though, remember, when the bodhisattva is mature, pure, you develop this altruism, equanimity, everyone has been my mother, exchanging oneself for others, that's the Tonglen piece I just basically mentioned. I don't have time to go through the details. And bodhicitta. Then we talked about the six perfections, the way you must be. This puts the whole package together. This is the method and the wisdom. The wisdom of how things exist and things you must always practice. Generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort, concentration, and then ultimately when you can concentrate, you can go get insight and you will develop understanding of wisdom, the ultimate reality. And so compassion, then renunciation from not wanting this and then wanting to become a Buddha. That's the path. And this is how our teachers have taught us. Lot to think about, right? Lot to think about. We have 10 minutes. We can do at least one meditation. I'm using this book because I find it much more easy to understand rather than your mind going like, what was that all about? It's easy to understand. So let me see which one I want to do. Then let's do equanimity. I think this is a better way to do it, equanimity, okay? Let's talk about equanimity, bodhicitta, since this is the last class. So just sit comfortably, okay? Okay, so imagine in the space in front of you, three people. Someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent to. Retain the images of the friend, enemy, and stranger throughout the meditation. First, focus on your friend and ask yourself why you like this person. See if you can recognize that your reasons are mainly because of what she or he does for you. Are those good reasons for liking someone and holding them too very dear? Now, look at the person you dislike and examine your reasons for feeling that way. again, check if your ego is involved. For example, the person may have harmed you or may behave in ways that you find unacceptable. Are those good reasons for disliking someone and treating them badly or wishing them harm? Okay, now look at the person you feel indifferent to. Why do you feel this way? Is your ego involved here as well? Is it because this person has neither helped you nor harmed you? Also ask yourself if you regard these relationships as permanent. Do you believe that you will always get along with your friend? That you will never get along with your enemy? And that you will always be distant from the stranger? Now, recall relationships you've had in the past that changed. A friend becoming an enemy, or a stranger, or vice versa. Now imagine the friend visualized in front of you doing something hurtful or unacceptable. Would your feelings towards this person change? Recall that this person was not your friend before you became acquainted, and you could very easily cease to be your friend in the future. Realize there is no sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only the friend of this moment. Relationships changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can be tomorrow's enemy. Now turn your attention to your enemy and imagine this person doing something kind or helpful, such as praising you for something you did or helping you fix your car, which has broken down. Look carefully at your feelings for this person. Are they softening? You can learn to feel warmly towards your enemy. You know this has happened before and will happen again. Why hold so strongly to the conception that this person is definitely your enemy? And what of that stranger? This relationship could go either way. But since we are trying to develop a more positive feelings for others, imagine the stranger doing something helpful, such as giving you the right direction when you are lost, or returning your wallet, which you dropped absentmindedly. How would this affect your feelings towards this person? So if you're able to accept the existence of the past and future lifetimes, consider the idea that you've known these three people before, in other lifetimes, but in very different relationships. Consider that the friend of this lifetime may have been your enemy in another lifetime, or a present enemy may have been someone very dear to you, a parent, a sibling, or a close friend. And the present stranger may have been both a friend and an enemy. See how this affects your feeling towards these three people now. Understand that relationships are not permanent, but a loved one can become an enemy and vice versa. And a stranger can become a friend or an enemy. Also, no one is a friend, enemy, or stranger from their own side. independently. Rather, they become so in dependence on how our mind labels them. Someone you regard as a friend is seen by others as an enemy. And there are people who love the person you regard as an enemy. Therefore, it is unwise to cling to these three types of people as if they were permanent and independently existing. It is also very helpful to recognize that in some ways everyone is equal, exactly the same. None of this means that we should not be discriminate. On a practical level, it is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people and are wise to keep our distance from others. This is not a contradiction. The point of meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, whether they help or harm us at this point in time, and to see that our present discrimination is based on arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable labels. Let's do a nice dedication. This is the last class of presenting the path. How fantastic. Throughout this session, we have listened to so many things, trying to process them, analyze them, think about them, aspire, have courage. It's my wish to benefit others. We dedicate all of this, the sowing of all these seeds, for the sake of sentient beings. And when we do become a Buddha, who else will we benefit? Other sentient beings. So this is for them, long term. That's why we are sowing the seeds. And may this compassion grow and grow in the hearts of all. Thank you. So I hope this class was helpful. And, really, it's an amazing way of looking at the entire path. There are a lot of tools. This place, this Kadampa Center, we are so fortunate to even get this kind of trainings and teachings from Geshe-la. And really, the venerables, we can't forget them, how much they do. And it's amazing how it can change people's lives. It certainly has helped me a lot. And so I just hope that you guys take some of these things. Now you know where to look, what to do. I know that if I have one more minute, and I will just some people talk about how, what do I do when I go home. So I have some things. Gary, where are you? If you want to pass those things out. When I first started, I had a question. So now I know these things. When I go tomorrow, what do I do? This is what helped me a little bit. And I'll tell you something. Just let me just share very quickly. So this is what's being passed around. It looks like this. And I must have left this out. Okay, I must have. This is just a little template that can help you get going. When you go to the module called Establishing the Daily Practice, is when you will really learn all the things that you could be doing. From Lama Zopa Rinpoche has a beautiful reading on how you get up, and you can bring in the essence in every move you make. From the morning you get up in the bed, you can think about thanking that you're alive today. That's the number one. Okay? There are some preliminaries in your prayer book, the Golden Prayer Book. If you just look at the very first couple of places, a couple of pages even, basic prayers and practicing daily practice. It tells you morning activities. It takes, really guys, it takes 10 minutes or so once you get to know it. It's not difficult to do. And you can say this, you bless your feet, you bless your speech, you bless your body, speech, and mind, and then you can take refuge If you've taken a refuge, and you can do a couple of prayers, and if you, when you start to really establish that, suggested is 35 confession Buddhas, if you have time, or at least during the day, you can do some purification, read a little bit of Lamrim, all the things you learned in this class about karma and how mind works. Pick up the liberation in palm of your hand. Pick up the subject you really want to learn a little bit more about that you still feel like you can't understand it. Do a little bit of searching, and that becomes your meditation. And also when you meditate, don't go so far deep into it that you lose it. When you start to feel good in the meditation, time to stop, even 5 minutes, 10 minutes, right? And then do a couple of mantras. You know, ask Geshe-la, you know, what mantra should I do, you know? Get to know him, or to Geshe Sangpov. You know, they're both Geshes. They will help you, Mani Padme Hum, or whatever the mantras they will give you. Learn more about the meaning of it, and do it. And you'll see that instead of your mind wandering into some non-virtuous thoughts, it will hone right into it. And you will start to feel much more blissful, calmer, and it becomes part of your daily practice. And it stays with you almost all day long. And then what happens, you don't even think about it. It just happens automatically. It's like that beautiful song you hear in the morning, and then it plays in your mind all the time, and you can't get rid of it. It's not like, you know, it's something nice and pleasant that will stay with you. This is not a pressure. I got to do this 20 and a 20. Don't put yourself under pressure. Make it that enthusiastic perseverance, joyful effort. Okay? Thank you so much.